Bulli, der Eishockey-Podcast.
Talking about the AHL, Matt, after making such an impact in Salzburg, you returned to the States. How did the San Diego Gulls approach you?
How did they approach me?
Yeah.
Pat Verbeek approached me. So Pat's the general manager for Anaheim. And when I was still in Munich as an assistant coach, Pat and I were put in touch through a colleague. And he was an assistant general manager for the Tampa Bay Lightning at that time. And what he was asking me about was, how are we doing our player development with Red Bull? Because it started to come to the to fruition that Red Bull starts to get a little reputation for our player development. And so he reached out to figure out what's our process like and what are we doing. And I think in this somehow, some way, he was sort of starting to measure me for like, could I come over to come maybe be their assistant coach, you know, or maybe come over and be, you know, an American League coach in the Tampa organization. And then Pat, you know, moved to Detroit, you know, and he and I remained a little bit in touch. So Detroit drafted Moritz Seider. He reached out to me, hey, what's this kid like? And I'm like, he's a stud. And so they end up drafting him, but we got back in touch there. And then Pat was named general manager, maybe in the back half of a season. And once I saw it on NHL.com and that it was announced, I was like, oh, wow, this is great. I shot him a text message. And I'm not kidding you, it could be 20 seconds later, he called. And, you know, all I'm doing is saying, hey, congratulations, this is great hire. And so we started this, like, conversation again, like we did in past, and it all felt really normal until it didn't. And then I was like, oh man, he's gonna offer me a job. And so he did. It wasn't time to leave Red Bull just yet. So what they did was they brought in Roy Sommer into San Diego for 1 year. And then while I was finishing out my contract with Salzburg, and then I went back and had an opportunity to take over San Diego from there.
Mm-hmm. Did you sign immediately or did you ask for some time to consider the offer?
Oh, this was, there's nothing immediate about this. Yeah, this was not immediate. I didn't know. So there, like, while this is going on, like, you know, there's a plan for me in Red Bull as well, you know, to continue on and, you know, potentially move on, and they're trying to keep me within the organization, and so that's in our minds because we are so fond of the Red Bull organization. The truth is, once you kind of like boil down to it, it's like I could go on and win five more championships in Europe and not be guaranteed that an NHL general manager is coming over saying, hey, why don't you come be with us? There's no guarantee. And so to jump at that opportunity, we certainly didn't move fast, but it felt right in the end. It was not an easy decision. We can say that.
What was the biggest adjustment when coaching in the AHL compared to Europe?
Oh my gosh. let's say that, like, with Red Bull, as a coach, I was learning about winning. In San Diego, my first year, I was learning about losing and I wasn't good at it. And, I can say that, so for context, San Diego, like the year prior had a really poor record. It was one of the worst in the history of the American League. And so I knew going into it that this was going to be a big project, but I also have this like self-confidence that I'm like, I know we can do this, you know, like I can see us turning this around in no time at all. And no time at all is not a real thing. You know, it is a process to building something that's going to be a sustainable winner. And so like we won our first two games. Actually, we played Marco Sturm in Ontario, and we won our first two games. And I'm like, oh, this American League thing, this is easy. I knew we could do this. And then we lost 13 games in a row. And I was in the middle of this. I was like, I don't know how we're ever going to win again. You know, like that. I'm not telling the team that, but that's what's going on in my mind. I'm like, man, we got so much to clean up and fix, and so many habits that need to be changed. And you know, the reality is, we had a very young team. If you imagine, Anaheim has been in a rebuild. Their rebuild results in draft picks. Their draft picks become goals. Their goals need to be developed. And so this is a part of the project, is that we have to take these young players and help teach them how to win. I always tell them that Pat Verbeek brought me there to develop champions. And whether or not we were going to win a championship in San Diego, he knew I had championship pedigree and championship experience. So I was going to teach them the habits and behaviors that it takes to become a champion. And so this was our mission. And so it was a hard one. Like, it was the American League is hard because your roster is ever changing. And when guys get really good, the NHL team grabs them. And so then you have a hole in your roster, and then you got to go figure out, how do you fill that? And that's the nature of the league. It's just the way that it is. And it's that way for everyone. We did have younger groups, and younger groups full of younger draft picks that needed to develop. And over those years, we set a goal in my last season there that we were going to be a playoff team, you know. And at the beginning of the year with our roster, I was like, man, we got a chance to like really finish high in our division. The Pacific Division is very strong. And then our starting goalie becomes a Duck, and then our all-star centerman becomes a Duck, and then our best defensive defenseman becomes a Duck. And now it's like, oh boy, making the playoffs is no guarantee anymore. But the guys like really, really rallied around the team goal. And that was what felt really good. And one of the things that's very obvious when you're coaching Red Bull is that when you sign up to coach or to play for Red Bull Salzburg or Red Bull Munich, you're signing up to win a championship. And everybody knows that right away. And that's a vision that's created from the top right on down. When you're in the American League, there's a lot of conflicting agendas, because, yeah, you're trying to win, but you also need these players to make it. Like, if you win a Calder Cup, but nobody makes it to the NHL, you're not doing your job. Like, the reason that the American League exists is to fuel the NHL teams. Mm-hmm. And so that balance is a real delicate one. But for us to be able to, you know, get into the playoffs this year, it was a big accomplishment. And San Diego is now set up, I believe, for sustainable success. I think they've climbed out of the basement, and they're now a respected, once again, I think, because they have been this way in the past, but I think they're again a respected organization that's extremely competitive. And I think they're set up for more success in the future.
Mm-hmm. As you said, when players called up to the NHL team, I think it's like a limitation to you as a coach. How did you work with that?
I think you just realize that it's like your job is to develop these players, mm-hmm. and your job is to win. And if you kind of think of it in that context, you're okay. Because like, as a coach, like, how fun is it to have a young player with a dream, and you've got a moment in time to like help mold him into what he wants to be? And now all of a sudden you watch him accomplishing his dream of being an NHL player. And you know that this was already a good player. Maybe you just had to polish some things. Maybe you had to make some big changes with this player. Maybe it was just going to happen anyway. But to know that you had a hand in molding mm-hmm. somebody and accomplishing their dream, and also organizationally, when you know that you are making an impact in helping the Ducks to become a Stanley Cup champion, like, that was the goal. And when you frame your thinking that way, it's not a detriment to the coach when somebody goes up. It's actually a stamp of approval that what we're doing is right, and we have to keep doing this if we're going to keep having success.
Mm. How frequently were you in contact with the Ducks coaching staff?
It was different when Greg Cronin was there and when Joel Quenneville was there. We're very close during training camp. That's a great time for exchanging. And then Greg Cronin, we would probably talk once a month extensively. Joel Quenneville, we didn't have the same kind of relationship that Greg Cronin and I had prior. But he is unbelievable, this guy. He's a winner, and he's such a good man. There's no mistaking why he's one of the winningest coaches in NHL history. And there's so many similarities between him and Don Jackson. Like there's a lot yeah. of personality similarities that between the two. But Q and I would talk maybe every couple months, just check in with each other.
Was it life easier for you and your family being back in your own country with speaking your native language?
Of course, it has to be. Yeah, I think that anytime you take a translation out of any kind of a social setting, it's automatically easier. I think that the big thing, you know, is for the kids that they're in school, that they're, you know, in their native language. You know, that was much easier, making friends and learning and those kind of things. I think for Megan and I, you know, the things you don't think about people living abroad is like, I don't know, like even if we wanted to like go from our house like to the Altstadt, it's like we got to go figure out, you know, how are we going to get on the U-Bahn and what exit are we going to get off at, and like, you know, how are we going to get a ticket, and you know, when we get there, how are we going to order at the restaurant? Like there's all these little things that are like processes that when you're in your own country, they just feel simpler, and not that you don't appreciate them. It's just easier when you're speaking your native language. And those are all things we figured out. But yeah, I would say more succinctly, yes, this was easier.
Coming back to you, Megan, the family part again. How did life change for you and the kids in California?
Well, I remember when Matt said, hey, the Anaheim Ducks want me to coach their AHL team. And I said, where is their AHL team? Because it could be anywhere. It could be Canada. Yeah. It could be... said San Diego. I was like, I could live in San Diego. I could
yes,
live there.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I think that right off the bat, living in San Diego was incredible. It's an amazing place to raise kids. You know, the weather is gorgeous all the time. The beach is right there. It's truly, truly a dream come true. You know, so life... it didn't, like we always say, it wasn't better, it wasn't worse, you know, it's just different. And I, going back to, you know, was it easier in our home country? Sure, there are things that are easier, but America is kind of built on convenience, which can be a great thing. But one of the things we loved about Europe so much was that you had to walk places and you had to, you know, challenge yourself a little bit. So there were some times that, you know, America is great and we were so grateful to be in San Diego, but we definitely missed some of the European things too. But man, San Diego, can't ask for anywhere better.
Yeah, the beach is quite different from the English Garden in Munich, right? Did you enjoy it there? Did you spend some time there?
Yeah. Yeah, we went to the beach often. I always tried to make it... when we did this in Europe too, we never wanted to get used to where we lived. I remember when we would go to Marienplatz and we would look at the Glockenspiel and we would just say, I hope we never get used to this. I hope we always look at that and just are like, wow, it is so cool that we live here. Same thing in Salzburg with, you know, Geisberg and the Untersberg. And so in San Diego, we were like, we never want to get used to the fact that we're 15 minutes from the Pacific Ocean. And in February, we can get a burrito and, you know, sit in the sun and watch surfers. So I do feel like we took advantage of that. And we did go to the beach a lot. So it was great.
You make me so jealous. Even we have an extraordinary summer this year. I think for is it about 7-8 weeks now we have in degrees Celsius, we have 35 degrees Celsius. And it's crazy.
Yeah, that's hot.
It is, yes, yes. I love it. I love it. I love the good weather. But it's not the beach.
No.
How did you adjust to move back to America, especially with the kids?
How did I adjust? The adjustment period was not as challenging because we have always come back to the States in the summertime. Mm-hmm. So the kids have always had a taste of America. They've always been, you know, pretty comfortable living here. And really, most American cities are pretty similar. So they're just, it really wasn't that challenging. I think the school system was challenging. They both started going to school.
Mm-hmm.
I think the family time, that was a hard adjustment because, you know, Matt, the year before, had played as many games as they could possibly play in Salzburg. You know, went until game 7 of the finals. And I think they played 64 games. Well, an AHL regular season is 72 games. And so that was the biggest adjustment for us. The family time, he was gone a lot more. Things in America are just busier. You know, the kids' sports are busier. Their extracurriculars are busier. So I really was fighting in the adjustment period. I felt like I was fighting to kind of hold on to some of these values that we had in Europe, this family time and slowing down. And remember, we can walk places. We don't have to drive everywhere, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Really, the adjustment period was easy. It was almost my own preference to try to really hold on to some of the things that we valued about Europe when we moved.
I remember some year back texting Matt on WhatsApp when Munich was searching for a new coach. Was it last winter or something? Said, is there any chance you come back? I bet Megan doesn't want to go back, right? And he was like, no, Megan is the one who's saying, let's go back.
Yes. You know what? It's funny because I got a bad rep. Christian, Renee, they would always say, well, you know, it's Megan that wants to go back to North America. And it was not me. When the San Diego thing came up, I was like, oh, really? We're going to move? So I would like to set the record straight that I would live in Europe tomorrow if I could.
Yeah, it's just you for me, you're like American girl, you know. You're everything I see in an American girl, and you went back right for the playoffs. You came later, and so that manifested in my head like a bit. You enjoy your time there. I knew you like Europe, but I thought it's for you. Yeah, we go back home.
Yeah. Right? I think things changed in Salzburg. Our family became closer. I started to realize the value of raising children in Europe. It's just different. It is better, I think, for the kids. There's just the outdoor time. I really, really cherished our time, and I learned. And I changed. I was a different person year 10 than I was year 1. And I love living in North America, and I'm so grateful for all the places that we've been. But yeah, by the end of it, I was like, I could do this forever. So I can see how you thought that about me, but I definitely evolved.
And it's
Austrian. Really.
Yeah. What I forgot to, the question before, you made the transition too. Not only Matt made the transition from assistant coach to head coach, you made it too as the assistant coach's wife to the head coach's wife. And I remember you saying, yeah, Steph, you know, I don't know. Can I still be friends with the players' wives? Or am I now the head coach wife? I shouldn't connect too much because I know things they don't know, maybe. How did you get along with that change?
Yeah, I've actually only ever done one other podcast, and it was about this topic, discussing kind of coaches and players' wives' relationships. I had a hard time realizing, you know, what is my role? And am I going to be able to go to dinner with them and do all these things? And I learned that we were still one team. We were still common goal. And as long as I set some boundaries, I felt comfortable having those friendships and relationships. And really in Salzburg specifically, the last 2 years, well, really the COVID year, that we could only be friends with each other, right? Because we couldn't be outside the Red Bull bubble. So we really, our kids, the only people they saw were Red Bull families. And from that, we kind of grew this sisterhood. And, you know, Matt always talks about the brotherhood and how important that is. And we really improved on the sisterhood. And we had each other's backs. And, you know, we celebrated together. We were mad together. We, you know, made fun of Klagenfurt fans together. And we really had each other's backs. And when they won the first time in Hungary, you know, those were the people that we hugged first. It's, you know, the wife that sat next to you every game. And so I was very proud of how I had those relationships and friendships in Salzburg. You know, and I think it was so important for all of us. And I think it strengthened the team, because I argue that if their home life is good, if their wife is happy and their kids are happy, they're going to be better at practice and they're going to be better on the ice. You know, if there's a girl that doesn't have anybody or their kids don't have anyone to play with and they're stressed or upset or homesick, that player is going to be thinking about that and he's going to be worried about that and might not perform at a high level. So I do think that those relationships looking out for each other are important. And I have brought that to San Diego. It was a little different in San Diego because they're all like 21 and just happy to be there. but, you know, as we went on, there were a few wives that were in similar situations as us. And I think as a young hockey wife, it's a unique experience to be able to connect with them and just say, hey, I've been there. I know what you're going through and it's going to be okay. And I'm here if you need any help. And yeah, I think it's always possible.
That's a good cut. Back to you, Matt. A familiar face from the past emerged, Marco Sturm, your head coach from the Olympic Games and the Boston Bruins, approached you. Did you have a sense that something's big coming up, some bigger change is going to happen?
After Marco and I got done together at the Olympics, and I don't know, there's sort of like, is part of it because we'd accomplished something so monumental, you know, like where you look back and everything was just so positive, but it felt like almost bigger than that. Like Marco and I, we didn't really know each other prior to the Olympics. And within that, whatever it is, 3.5 weeks, felt like we got really close. And after we finished with that, I just kind of had this feeling like he and I were going to coach together again. And I didn't know at which capacity. Like, was I going to, you know, be the head coach and he was going to be the assistant? Was he going to be the head coach? I didn't know how this was going to work. But coincidentally, you know, we end up coaching, you know, from we're in Germany together and Pyeongchang together. And then all of a sudden we're in California as our closest rival, 90 minutes apart. It's a little bit hard to believe. And so like we got a chance to, you know, to cross paths and chat a little bit. And when Marco went to Boston, there was something in the back of my head that was like, ooh, I wonder if this is how it's going to be. And, you know, the first year went and, you know, they did phenomenally, you know, 100-point team and, you know, make the playoffs. And I think a lot would say that Marco, you know, overachieved and they found some new ground with their group as everybody's growing together. And, you know, then this opportunity came up and I always thought at some point in time it might happen, but I can just tell you that I'm thrilled that it did.
Yeah. We learned today that moving to the San Diego Gulls wasn't that easy of a decision and took some time. How easy was this decision to make?
Not easy. So it wasn't easy because earlier this year, I signed an extension to be in San Diego. And so I was there for 3 years and I was extended for another several years. And so I had an opportunity where like I'm thinking in my head, we're planning, like we're not going to move our family, you know, and we're going to be in one place for, you know, 5 years or 6 years or, you know, it's going to be a while that we're in one place. And I felt tied to Pat I felt aligned with Pat. I feel like he has a plan for me and supports me. And so it's like in my head, it's really difficult to envision doing anything else. And, you know, Pat and I had had conversations about, you know, maybe someday, you know, there's an opportunity where you can come up and, you know, be with the Ducks. If you're ready as a head coach, great. If not, maybe there's a place on Q staff where, you know, you can, you know, be an assistant. We have had those conversations. There's obviously nothing in stone, but it's just, we're talking mm-hmm. about the future together. And that's a nice thing to have with your boss. And, you know, like when this opportunity came, it sort of felt like, I'm already set up. I know what I'm doing. And the more that I got into it with Marco, like he and I, we had an interview and, I don't even know. Maybe we were on the phone together for 2 hours and, he got back to his family and his family's like, that's that one person you were interviewing the whole time. And, he was like, yeah, it's just, you know, it's easy. It's like kind of picking up where you left off with an old friend somehow. And I felt that connection right away. And Don Sweeney with his interview, I felt the guy that, you know, I can tell how organized he is. I can tell his vision for the team. And, you know, I could feel like there's, you know, maybe an opportunity for me to come in and help support. And, you know, and now you start thinking about an Original Six team and like an opportunity to go be in the NHL. It's, I don't know. It's just, once you get through all those thoughts, it's like, yeah, this is really cool. We got to take this opportunity.
Mm. You just mentioned that the Bruins are one of the Original Six teams. Is that extra special for you?
For sure. I mean, like any time you get a chance to be a part of like history or, you know, an organization, you know, with this kind of roots, like legacy and tradition, it's like, this is fun. And, you know, that there's a lot of people's shoulders that you're standing on, you know, being a part of the organization. And, you know, one of the things that comes with it is like, you know, people like Zdeno Chara, you know, like he's in and a part of the staff and Z is, you know, helping our leadership group and, you know, also, you know, around us. And he says he doesn't want to be a coach, but like, you know, he and I've had some conversations about like the defense and, you know, like where he can see the team improving and just getting a chance to like go be able to chat with people like that, you know, that have been such a part of these kind of organizations. I think part of that is, you know, where you can utilize the tradition that's here.
Yeah, what coaching style have you developed over the years in America, especially maybe changed to Europe? And what can the Bruin fans expect of you?
I'd say that my coaching style revolves around two core values, connection and collaboration. So for any German speakers that might not know those words, connection is the relationship building, and real investing into people and collaboration is that we're working together. I'm not a dictator. I believe in a partnership. And I think that even from a head coaching lens, I think that if you can keep that idea that we're all in this together, I think somewhere in there is my coaching style. You know, for the Bruin fans, it's Marco's team. You know, like this is, you know, it's and I'm here to support him and the staff, however is necessary, whatever I'm called on, however I can help, however I can support. I'm here for the players. I'm here for Marco. I'm here for the other coaches, and I'm really willing to pick up whatever is on my table and do a great job for them.
Maybe to complete your personality a bit for the listeners. I was in contact this week with a Munich new arrival, Trevor Carrick. He was a year with you in San Diego. And he told me, like, you know, Matt's special. We were playing bad. We were positioned bad in the table. And I just waited every game. He just snaps. But he never did. Why is that? Why? What is in your style that you just don't never lose it, more or less?
Well, I'd say I lose it sometimes. I think I erupt. I don't know, once a month. You know, it's something on average like that. Maybe once every 6 weeks. I just think that there's so much of the game is emotional. And I think you have to save those emotional bullets as a coach for specific moments. Otherwise, they're going to be useless. And especially if your team's bad, if you're going in there yelling and snapping every day, they're going to tune you out and turn you off in a hurry. But again, if you think about this idea that we're in this I care about you and we're in this together, somewhere in there is the coaching style. And I had a player this year in my exit meeting that said something that may help this answer a little bit. He said, Matt, I've never had a coach like you before. I said, what do you mean? And I'm just expecting, like, you know, where's the shot going? You know, like, and he goes, no, he's like, I've never had a coach that can stand in front of the room and like deliver a message, command respect, and we all we're all respecting. And then we get out on the ice and you like bump into me and like we start laughing together and all of a sudden we're like talking about my family. And I've never had a coach that did it like that, where you could be like commanding the room and in front of people, and then in the next moment you're laughing and telling stories and finding like opportunities where you can connect with people, and that's my style. Like, it's I'm a teacher. I set really high standards. You know, this is what Red Bull taught me, and we're going to chase after them. And along the way, I'm going to support the heck out of you. And if you don't feel like doing it, you know, we're either going to find someone else, or you're going to get less opportunity, or sometimes the hammer has to come out. But I try to save that for very special times.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's an advantage that you and Marco already have coached together?
Definitely. Yeah. And there's an immediate relationship and chemistry and understanding of, you know, each other's core values and who we are as people. I think that puts you so far ahead versus, you know, going in and meeting someone for the first time.
Mm. Maybe some private background in between. I remember a pact you made with Patrick Dallaire in Munich. You said if one of you made it into the NHL, the other one would follow. Patrick moved from Munich to Charlotte this year. Tongue in cheek, did you leave him down, let him down, or is it just delayed?
Well, when you're an assistant coach, you don't necessarily have hiring power. And Boston has a fantastic goalie coach who's been there forever. Pat will be an NHL coach. I'm certain of that. Pat Dallaire will be a goalie coach in the National Hockey League. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah. It was just fun. I heard you moving to Boston, and like 2 weeks later, Munich announced after 12 years now, I guess, Patrick Dallaire is leaving to the US. And I said, oh my God, it's going to happen. The pact, it's going to happen. and then I found out it's going to be Charlotte. And I mean, they have been asking several times, and he had to do that step once, right?
Yeah, it's time. It's a great, you know, he's been amazing for Red Bull. You know, you just look at that stable of goalies that he's, you know, developed and worked with, and all the championships from, you know, Salzburg and Munich. It's a great next step for Pat.
Yeah. Right now you're in Chicago. Have you already found a suitable place in Boston?
I'll turn this one over to our director of travel.
The facility and housing manager.
Yeah. You taught me well, Steph. We did find a place. We didn't do very much research. I just kept thinking when these conversations were happening, I was like, this isn't going to happen. There's so many things that we, you know, Boston has to offer us the job. Anaheim has to let you out of your contract. It has to be, all these boxes have to be checked before this is going to happen. And there was one day where he, you know, had heard from Anaheim, had heard from Boston, and he kind of called me in the bedroom and he goes, I think we're going to Boston. I was like, okay, I think we're going to Boston. So I had done no research. I know nothing about the housing. We just lived in Southern California. So to me, I'm thinking it can't be harder than finding a place in San Diego. It was pretty challenging finding a place in Boston, but we did, you know, sight unseen. We found a place, and it's in a, you know, walking distance of our kids' school. So yeah, we're nice. Excited.
When are you planning to move?
By the 26th of this month, we will be stationed in Boston.
Oh, you're already preparing then, right?
Yeah. Everything's booked. We're ready to go.
Yep.
Have you been already in touch with your former player, Keith O'Coin, who lives in Boston with family?
Yes, and yeah. Maureen O'Coin. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so actually, coincidentally, we were trying to find my son a place to play hockey. Like kind of in the steps. It was like, you know, we got to find a place to live. We've got to find a place for my son to play hockey. You know, like it was like in the top three that we needed to do. And Keith O'Coin, I reached out to him. I was like, hey, like, what are your suggestions? And he actually led me to the organization that Mason's going to play for. So we are very much looking forward to getting back in touch with them.
We already have dinner planned. So
nice. Megan, as you're probably a moving pro by now, how do you prepare for the next move?
Well, I am very organized. And the biggest part of my organization is I throw a lot of things away. So we don't hold on to things. You know, when you have kids, they accumulate a lot of stuff. And so we, you know, donate stuff, or we give it to, I've got nephews, so we give things to them. We don't keep a lot of things, and that really helps with the move. If they're not playing with a toy, let's get rid of it. You know, if they aren't reading a book, let's donate it to the library. So step one is getting rid of the clutter. And then step two is I just kind of have processes of how to pack things, and I label everything. It is a little complicated because we did not know we were moving to Boston when we left San Diego. So all of our stuff is still in San Diego. So we have to fly to San Diego, pack up that house, ship it to Boston. So we've got a few steps. This is going to be a complicated move, but with teamwork and organization.
And Megan. Our secret weapon.
We can do it.
Can I hire you for training for my son? Because his room is like fully packed of everything and doesn't give anything away.
Well, this is the good thing about moving so much is I will like kind of get rid of things right before we leave. And then by the time we come back, they've forgotten about it, you know? So like, we're not going to be back in this house for another 8 months. By the time we come back, and then if they ask about it, I'll say, oh, I think that's in Boston, you know? And then when we go to Boston, I'll say, oh, I think that's at the Illinois house. I have a strategy.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah. Maybe I try that. Not moving, but let's see. I take something out of that. Could the O'Coins be a starting point for you building a new family network in Boston then?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, Maureen was Megan's first, like...
Let me tell the story, because you're going to...
Go ahead.
Maureen O'Coin is a spouse. And I will never forget, she told me one time, you never forget your first old wife. The first old wife in the room. And she was like, that was Maureen, to me, was an old wife. But she was a mentor. She was so awesome. Just one of the coolest, greatest people I've met. And when we got this job, she reached out right away. She's driven past the house. Like, she has educated me on school districts, on hockey teams. Yes, it is. And this is the good thing about hockey. Matt always says the paths are narrow in hockey. You always run into the same people. The paths are narrow. And that's the cool part, is getting to reconnect when you move with people from other parts of your life.
Now, a tough part for you, I have to ask. You, as a diehard Chicago Bears football fan, will you now supporting my favorite team, the glorious New England Patriots?
Absolutely not. But the Bears do play in New England this year, so I am going to try to get tickets. But I will I'm never going to be a Pats fan. Absolutely not. Sorry.
I'm going to have to talk to the O'Coins for the support again. I know who they support. Fun story. I'm going to see the Patriots this year too. They're coming to Munich playing the Detroit Lions. And I gladly got a ticket.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So no chance for the Patriots?
No. No, but I am very happy to be a Bruins fan. So
that's good to know. To close it now, Matt, what is Megan's share in all this moving, even over continents? You want to say a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, people, you know, look at a coach, you know, who's, you know, you're getting interviewed and front and center of some things, and you're like, wow, you know, all of a sudden you made it to the NHL, and people see that. But what people don't see is like all of the support that goes on behind the scenes. And, you know, we hit on it on this podcast. It's like, for me to go take the opportunity to go be with Don Jackson and to go start my career in Europe, you know, it wasn't my decision. It was our decision. And to have someone behind me that's supporting me, you know, allowed that opportunity for Red Bull to begin. And then, you know, obviously the change, you know, Munich and Salzburg, and but even like the Olympics, like I was supposed to go home to Chicago for a month. Like we had a break, and this came up really late that I was going to be, you know, a member of the Olympic staff. And I remember I got the invitation, and I like called my wife. I was like, hey, like, is it okay if I don't go to Chicago and I go to the Olympics? She's like, yeah, you got to go do your thing. And, you know, then when we're moving back to San Diego and we're going to change what, you know, Salzburg starts to feel like home, you know, like we feel at home with Red Bull, you know, we're going to change. She's supporting me. And now we're moving our family from one side of the country, literally to the other. You know, those decisions don't happen without her support. And the change doesn't happen as smoothly without her carrying so much weight. And so I can say that I am not where I'd be without my wife. You know, our family's transitions would be, you know, impossible without this kind of support. But this isn't just a coaching story. When you think about my life, it's a family story, and it's not complete without Megan and her support.
That's so nice.
That's a nice closing section here. Matt, Megan, it's been a pleasure to see you again after so long. It's clear that humbleness and positivity we experienced with you in Munich haven't changed. You're still greatly missed by a lot of fans here. The Bully Podcast team wishes you all the best, and our former guest, Markus Sturm, as you both open this exciting new chapter in Boston with the Bruins. Thank you very much for making time for us and speaking almost 2 hours to us.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to be here. And I thank you so much for inviting and including Megan, because, you know, she is a huge part of our story. And, you know, the coaching thing doesn't happen without her. So we appreciate it.
Yeah, that was fun. I like reliving the old memories.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, true. Should do it more often.
Yeah, well, you'll just have to come to Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now that. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.